This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio, WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome. Jaguars This Week is underway here from the WOKV Jaguars studios inside Jacksonville Stadium. Brian Sexton with the senior editor of Jaguars.com, Vic Ketchman. Jeff Lagerman is here, Joe Fortunato as well. And we're here for the next 2 hours to talk about the Jaguars' big showdown in New York on Sunday. Vic, did you think we'd be talking about this Jets game is so meaningful for this team?
No, I didn't think I would cover a meaningful game this late in the season this year. I expected them to lose three of their first four games in Tap City before we even got to the bye week.
Well, that wasn't very confident of you.
No, it wasn't.
But
Tennessee was, we didn't expect Tennessee to collapse the way they did, and that's kind of the way.
No, but I didn't expect them to be as good as what they were last year. I mean, they had a lot of things go their way. But anyway.
Yeah, my expectations were beneath 4-4. Let me put it that way. I thought this would be a 2-win or 3-win team at this point that would get hot late in the year as it did in 2003, when they won, I think, what was it, 5 of their last 8 games?
Yeah.
And I kind of expected the same thing, but I didn't expect that in mid-November, a week and a half before Thanksgiving, that the Jaguars would be playing a meaningful game. But that's exactly what it is because there are only two teams in the AFC wild card race who have fewer than 4 losses. Jets have 4, then Jaguars have 4, and somebody's going to go forward this week, and somebody's going to, say bye-bye.
Texans are off this week. They're one of those teams you're talking about with fewer than 4.
No, they have 4. They're 5-4.
Oh, that's right. They are 5-4. Mm-hmm. Right.
And you can always tell how big of a game is by looking at the broadcast crew for those that want to listen to inferior information other than me and Brian and Vic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you get the C team, I guess you could say, with CBS. So you got Dan Fouts. Who does he work with?
Dick Enberg.
Dick Enberg. So you got Dick Enberg, Dan Fouts, I mean, it is a New York market, it's the C team, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's an upper level broadcast crew. It's not Enberg's not at the top of the mountaintop as he was when he had Olsen,
right.
Merlin Olsen. I mean, those days are over for him.
And Dan Dierdorf as well.
For a long time
he was right there as number 2. But so how good are the Jets? They started 3-0 and had everybody's attention because the rookie quarterback was throwing touchdowns at that point and not interceptions. They run the ball well. They look like a talented defense, and we know Rex Ryan is a talented defensive mind. You've watched the tape. What do you think?
Well, let me say this, that I think Rex Ryan is a fantastic coach. I really do. I mean, he changed the whole culture of that New York Jets franchise after being beaten down by Eric Mangini, and that's saying something right there.
Right.
Are they as good on defense as what their rankings are? No. And the reason I say that is because they have a dominant rushing attack that helps keep that defense off the field. The true telltale sign of a great defense, in my mind, is a defense that takes the ball away. And the New York Jets haven't done a lot of that. So I think that would put them, I think, a couple notches down, in my mind anyway, from what their ranking is. But still a very good football team that plays in probably one of the toughest divisions in football. And the thing that I like about them, and I guess you could kind of look at the flip side of this, is the reason why I've kind of been beating on this consistency drum with the Jaguars. They are 4-4, but look at their 4 losses. They had Miami crushed 2 weeks ago, only allowed 100 yards of offense to the Miami Dolphins, but they ended up allowing 21 points too off of kick returns to Ted Ginn, and then one of them was a fumble recovery by Jason Taylor. But look at the other games. They've been in them.
New Orleans.
They've been in them.
Obviously.
With the exception of New Orleans. That's the only game that they weren't in. in their entire schedule. They beat New England.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 16-9 in week two.
They got Tom Brady when he was kind of still rusty, but still, mm-hmm. that's saying something when you beat New England. Yeah. So are they as good as their record? I think they're about the same as what their record is. But with the improvement of Sanchez, they have the ability to be much better than average.
Yeah, people were saying, you know, Vic, you're fooling yourself. You're deluding yourself. Okay, yeah, I am. I'm trying.
In what sense?
Well, I'm trying to fool myself into believing that this is a big game with the playoffs, high stakes for the playoffs kind of game. You know, I am trying to convince myself it's this kind of game because if the Jaguars don't win this game, then there's not going to be one this year. This may be the only one. I enjoy this. I like late season games. Now, December's better than November. I mean, I would love for this to be a December game. You know, we're right down to the end, and there's going to be some snow, and you know, and it's going to be one of those classic, you know,
like
postseason environments.
Ago,
yes, exactly.
07, yeah.
The game in Pittsburgh in 07 that really kickstarted this team in its drive for the playoffs. Was just wonderful when the, you know, with the whiteout and the way the Jaguars were playing so physically, and so I'm hoping that we can get more of that this Sunday.
All right, so evaluate the rosters. I mean, you always like to look at teams and judge them by their rosters. So where do they stand?
I think the Jaguars have a below average roster, but they've got an offense that, if it stays healthy, is okay. It's okay. Offensive line starting to come together. The wide receiving core is starting to come together. They've got a great running back in Maurice Jones-Drew. And David Garrard, you know, gives us the mountaintop and the valley, you know, up and down. It's too much up and down. Now, as I challenged him a week ago, I'll challenge him again to eliminate the bad games. If David eliminates the bad games, he's good enough to take you to the playoffs. That's what he did in 07.
All right, how about the Jets roster by comparison?
I'm not crazy about it. I think it's a middle of the road roster with some stars on it. That's what the Jaguars don't have.
See, I don't see them. I don't see the stars.
Darrell Revis is a star.
Yeah.
DeBrickashaw Ferguson is a potential star.
Braylon Edwards.
No. I won't call him a star. Hold on. There are others. Those aren't the only ones.
Revis is probably the real star of that team.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as being among the elite at his mm-hmm. position. The only other one that I would say is a true star, and I'm talking elite at his position, Nick Mangold, the center.
That was the other guy I was going to go to. He's good enough to make Damian Woody a tackle. And Damian Woody at one time was a darn good center. I think they've got some big-time players, but I don't think the roster is butt-kicking. I don't think there's anything special about it.
I just wanted to back up the Revis numbers. Have mm-hmm. you seen what he's done this year?
Yeah.
Andre Johnson, 4 catches, 35 yards. Randy Moss, 4 for 24. Marcus Colston, 2 for 33.
Wow.
Terrell Owens, 3 for 13.
Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know mm-hmm.
he's been sensational.
That's pretty good numbers.
Yeah.
Gene Smith was just in here. We were talking about, you know, the Jets in our pregame interview, and he said it's debatable, but he may be the best corner in the league.
I want to throw something out here, and I've done this before 2 years ago. I'm going to do it again. As I have said, I know for a fact that the deal was worked out with the Steelers for the Jaguars to trade up and draft this guy. Kevin Colbert, the Steelers personnel director, blew it. He screwed it up. He leaked it. Somehow it got out. And it made it into print, and it tipped the Jets, and they knew they had to get above the Steelers to get Revis. And they traded with Carolina one pick ahead of the Steelers. But the deal was done here. The Jaguars were coming up for Revis. And I truly believe, and I said this back in 07, and I still believe it. If the Jaguars had gotten lucky and could have pulled that trade off and gotten Revis, he might have taken him to the Super Bowl. That was the 26 of 28.
Moss, yeah.
That was the 26 of 28 game in New England. And he was the guy that shut down Moss. Smitty wouldn't have had to play that soft cover, too, if he had had that guy.
Yeah, but when would he have signed?
Because Joel Siegel got a deal.
You know what I mean? If he comes here, okay, the Jets caved and gave him a ton of money. Would he have ever signed?
I don't know.
Here. Okay. I mean, so that's something to consider.
I know he wanted to come here. He visited here, and they fell in love with him here. The coaches loved him, and he loved this place. He really wanted to be drafted by this team.
355-NFL-1. Let's break. When we come back, your calls and more talk about the Jaguars' big game Sunday in New York. That's right, you heard it. Big game Sunday against the Jets. Here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Jaguars at Jets Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff, which means we'll start things here on News Talk Radio WOKV at 10 o'clock with the tailgate show. Pre-game show starts at noon. Jaguars and Jets at 1, followed by the Winn-Dixie postgame show and the scoreboard show, so don't miss a moment of it. Without anything else, go right to the phone line.
Absolutely.
Bring some of these folks on. All right, let's grab Safa out in Ponte Vedra. Hey, Safa, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Gentlemen, a question and a comment. The comment is, I've seen Jets pass rush is not that great. They've had only 13 sacks, I think, through 8 games. And the question is, they lost their nose tackle a few weeks ago. Did that affect their defense?
Chris Jenkins is a beast.
Yeah, he's a great player, you know, but he wasn't a pass rusher. That's probably the one weakness that they have as a defense, is that they don't have an elite pass rusher. But with the way Rex plays defense, I mean, they like to bring a lot of different bodies from a lot of different directions, and they're very unconventional. From talking to coaches around the league over the years, the one thing that's always said about a Rex Ryan defense is sometimes it's not fundamentally sound and it's very difficult to prepare for it because they don't do things that most coaches would do. In other words, he gambles. I mean, he'll leave certain areas vacated and bring pressure from and expect that pressure to make up for the gamble mm-hmm. in the secondary. But if the New York Jets ever had a Vernon Golston, you know, workout, to be, you know, a top elite mm-hmm. player like they were expecting him to be, boy, they'd be a lot better, because that's the reason why I think that they're not among the upper – they're not an elite defense because of that, because yeah. they don't create great pressure with four, and the great ones have.
If there's a team in the league that can play it, and if there's a coordinator in the league who will play it, the Jets and Rex Ryan are the team, and I'm talking about cover zero. I mean, they can man up and bring everybody.
They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And he'll do it.
They have 8 corners
yes.
on their roster.
Yes. Let me tell you how good their corners are. Tyrone Brackenridge couldn't make their team. And he's a pretty good player.
He was released in May.
Yeah.
And he's a very solid player for the Jaguars right now.
Couldn't make their OTA's roster.
Now, Lito Shepard's the other guy for those folks out there that don't realize.
I mean, Shepard and Revis on the corners, you can play cover zero.
Well, Shepard's been beat up, you know, so I don't know how healthy he's going to be in this game. He's missed 5 out of the last 6 games, and they've had to play Dwight Lowry. And Dwight Lowry is not the player that Lito Shepard is,
no.
but still a good player.
355-NFL-1. Safa, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
The strength of that defense, though, is the play of their middle linebackers. Probably the best middle linebacking tandem in football right now. Bart Scott, you know, who was grossly overshadowed by Ray Lewis in Baltimore
yep.
and played better than Ray, I think, for a couple of years there. But the guy that's out playing Bart Scott is David Harris. David Harris is a fantastic football player.
Is that the guy from Northwestern?
No, he's Michigan. From Michigan.
Michigan, I'm sorry.
But they think so much of him that as they were trying to grab Braylon Edwards, it was going to be a one and done. They were going to trade Braylon Edwards for David Harris. They ended up giving up players and draft choices to get Braylon Edwards and wouldn't part with David Harris.
They mm-hmm. gave up, and this is where I think the Jets are messing up as far as long-term future. They traded away to get Sanchez 2 picks and 3 players, and I think it was, I wrote it down, it was like the 17th overall, the 52nd overall, and 3 players, which no big deal. The 3 players
yeah.
weren't all that big of a deal, but Braylon Edwards, they traded another 2 players and 2 undisclosed future draft picks. That's where Tannenbaum, the general manager, may end up kind of shorting this franchise's future out a little bit, because he's trying to save his bacon here a little bit.
The Sanchez deal was viewed as fine because Cleveland was criticized for not getting enough for the pick for a franchise quarterback. They just wanted out of the money hole. But trading picks for wide receivers, yuck, yuck. Dime a dozen, you don't do it. Quarterbacks, absolutely. And sometimes it can blow up in your face, Rob Johnson. I think the Matt Cassel deal is going to blow up in Kansas City's face. But the Matt Schaub deal isn't blowing up in Houston's face.
No, it's working out. Hey, the Kansas City Chiefs, he needs talent. on that offense.
It's awful.
I mean, Matt Cassel, the one thing that I do respect about him from watching that game and watching him on tape, he is a competitor. And that's the first thing you got to look at when you got to figure out if a guy's going to be successful or not. And Matt Cassel, if you watch the end of that game right here in this stadium, you walk away from it going, Matt Cassel is a competitor.
Yep, he did. He really hung in there.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Let's go across the state to Tampa. Colin standing by. Good evening, Colin.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good.
Actually, I have a question for Loggy. I know he's watching a ton of film, and I actually watched every defensive snap this past week and focused a lot on Harvey, and I was really impressed with him in the run and his bull rush. But conversely, Brian Smith, I thought that he was an absolute liability in the run, and so was Quentin Groves, as we've known for years. And I saw a lot of Mel Tucker compensating by blitzing to their side. I mean, typically, I would say probably 75% of the blitzes went to Brian Smith or Quentin Groves' side, obviously, you know, in fear of them not holding up against the run. And is that something that you see a team like the Jets targeting and exploiting, especially being that they're the number two rushing team in the league? And also comment on Harvey, if you would.
Well, first of all, the comment on Derek Harvey, you know, he was okay. You know, they make the switch back to the 4-3. And he puts his hand down, and he's okay. You know, he's a good player against the run, but I mean, you know, you'd like to expect more out of a player that was a top 10 pick, obviously.
Jeffrey, he was not on the stat sheet.
No, I know.
On it at all.
His name wasn't even.
That can't be.
Well, I know. And he was involved in some tackles, but we had, you know, the head coach on our Monday show, Jaguars All Access, and he made the comment that he wants more out of his defensive ends. And he said that, he, you know, Derek was, and he's been saying this, that Derek was, you know, pretty solid against the run. I just think he was just kind of okay. I don't even know if solid would be a good word against the run.
Jack
this past
didn't say
week.
Solid. Jack said okay.
Yeah.
Just what you said. I asked him Monday, I said, how did your ends play? He said, okay.
Yeah. And that's
okay is not a resounding, you know, stamp of approval.
And for the eighth pick in the draft.
Well, and you expect more out of him, but I mean, it's very clear to me that, and unless something drastically changes, that Derek Harvey is not going to be a pass rushing force. I mean, he's just not. When I watch some of his fundamentals on his pass rush, I don't think they're very good. Brian Smith, interesting that you bring him up because, you know, the Jaguars put out their depth chart this week, and it's back to the 4-3 depth chart, which it's kind of always been that way, but they've kind of had the 3-4 personnel guys in there. Brian Smith is listed as a starter.
That happened today. He was told this morning at practice, the little walkthrough they do before lunch, he was told then to step up onto the first team at this morning's practice. So this was a big morning for him, and I talked to him. There's a story on Jaguars.com if folks would like to read it. He had 31 sacks, career sacks at McNeese State, set a couple of records. Of course, that is McNeese State. He was a third-round pick of the Philadelphia Eagles, cut after his second training camp with the Eagles. Picked up by the Rams and put on the Rams practice squad, and the Jaguars took him off the Rams practice squad.
So is that just by necessity, or has he earned it?
I think he earned it. I mean, if you looked and evaluated the defensive ends in the game against Kansas City, I think he was the most active and the most productive in a pass rusher's role.
All right, we've got much more to talk about and plenty of time to do it. We go till 8 o'clock tonight here on News Talk Radio WOKV. And news is next. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Well, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 7 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, once you go, you get it. Sexton, Loggeman, Ketchman, Fortunato with your phone lines are lighting up, so let's go right to them. We've got Art downtown in Springfield. Hello, Art. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, how y'all all doing this evening?
Good.
That's real good. I got one question for you only. Back in the year 2000, when Burnell was the quarterback, by the way, he comes close to the Super Bowl when they played the Denver Broncos. But the bottom line, you know, I got the T-shirt, by the way. Let me ask you one question only, and I'll take my answer off the air. What are the chances of the Jags ever winning the Super Bowl? I'll take my answer off the air. Bye.
Jaguars' chances of ever winning the Super Bowl? As good as any.
I was the word ever is what makes that question so easy to answer.
Ever, if it's this year, not very good.
Ever, though.
Ever, pretty good.
It's a long time. Yeah, it's a really long time.
Unless you're talking about, Cleveland Browns. Because right now they're in pretty bad shape. But anyway,
if you add ever to the Browns equation, they'd be better than now.
Yeah.
They'd be better than average.
I mean, for the longest time, I always said the Arizona Cardinals will never win a Super Bowl.
As someone who grew up in St. Louis?
With the ownership that they had, but the best thing that they ever did was to hire Ken Whisenhunt, who I have a lot of respect for.
They could do it this year.
They could. Absolutely.
They're good,
could.
And they're getting better. And they really are getting better. Beanie Wells is turning into a dominant running back. Their defense is really starting to come around. They've got those good young corners. They've got a good young defensive line. The kid from Florida State, Dockett, is just,
he's a beast.
He is a beast, and for lack of a better word. They have the potential, if Warner can somehow keep his arthritic old man's hip, in one piece for one more year, they got a shot.
355-NFL-1. Let's go to Lee, who joins us from Ponte Vedra. Hello, Lee. How are you tonight?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, Lee.
Jeff, I just have to rub it in. It cooked, grilled two backstraps last night. Oh, my goodness. Mm. Wonderful.
Good stuff.
Hey, my question
That'd
for you.
That would be venison, Vic, in case you
understand
that.
That's
backstraps.
Deer meat.
Ted Nugent would tell you a whole lot about backstraps, by the way.
Oh, man. Oh, they were just outstanding. I had some good luck this year.
Let me tell you a quick story. Where I'm from, deer hunting is a big deal.
Well, it's a culture.
Yes, it is.
Big time.
And we used to see these around this time of year, because this is now deer season is coming in. I would see these signs. People would put these signs on the side of the road that said, deer cut. Deer cut. Meaning that the guy who lives in the house that has the sign in the front yard will cut up your deer. He'll butcher your deer. Deer cut. All right? For the longest time, I thought these were nice people who were letting you know that the deer cut through here. The deer cut. Come across the road here, so slow down.
So you slowed down and all the deer cuts
yep.
for years. All right, Lee, go ahead.
My question is, what do you think about the switch from the 3-4 to the 4-3? And I'll take it off the line, but I appreciate it, guys. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Lee. I think it was needed. And the reason I say that is that, there's a lot of great coaches have always said that when you want to do something, do it your way,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's right.
And the head coach's way is 4-3.
For sure.
Mel Tucker comes from a 3-4 background, but he's going to run whatever.
You know, I had him last night on Jack Del Rio show, and I asked him that question. Honestly, the only 3-4 he's ever been exposed to was Romeo Crennel.
Yeah, and that's
it. He's a 4-3 guy, too.
He comes from a 4-3 background, but most recently 3-4. Mel's okay with running whatever, but that directive comes from the head coach.
Right.
I mean, it's his defense. It's his name. He's known for defense. Much like Rex Ryan, because when you read Rex Ryan's quotes up in New York and he talks about Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator for the New York Jets, he says, hey, look, Mike's our defensive coordinator, but I'm calling the plays. This is my defense. Mm-hmm. I built my reputation and my success mm-hmm. as a defensive coordinator. Why take myself out of that mix?
Listen, they brought in this 3-4 for an obvious reason. During the offseason, Jack Del Rio looked at his defensive line personnel and said, we're thin. I mean, that was where, I know for a fact, that's where his and the organization's greatest concerns were, on the defensive line. Then, so you put a little bit of 3-4 in there with the idea that you're going to lighten the load a little bit, lighten the burden up front, and then you lose Reggie Hayward and Jeremy Mincy.
The original plan, though, in experimenting with the 3-4, was to be able to dabble in it
right.
in pressure packages. That was the original intention, and then it got carried away.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the injuries then made it, their base defense.
And see, I didn't see that.
Well, that's what
I never saw that.
That's what the party line is. That's what I'm getting.
Okay, well, you both are talking about the philosophies and coaches. Jeff, don't you think that the personnel dictates, even though they don't have enough of it, dictates 4-3, the
personnel
linebackers?
Personnel always dictates,
of course,
what you do.
Always.
And I don't think that they've ever had the personnel to make them switch to a 3-4. I never thought that.
Listen, when Dom Capers was here, and Tony Brackens was in his prime,
he ran a
4-3. Brackens would have been a great 3-4 linebacker. He would have been James Harrison. He would have been he would have been Greg Lloyd or Kevin Green. He was perfect for it. Perfect for it.
But the rest of their personnel didn't.
Jeff doesn't agree.
I disagree, but I mean, it doesn't
you don't matter. You don't think he could play in space?
Oh, there's no question that Tony can play in space, but Tony was best when Tony could just put his hand down and run.
Okay.
I mean, that's when he really disrupted things. But, you know, you look at Dom Capers when he goes to Green Bay this year. Green Bay's been running a 4-3 for how long? I mean, ever since the early 80s?
Right.
Since Gilbert Brown.
So they've got personnel for a 4-3. Right? I mean,
right.
That's what they've been drafting for,
working,
all these years. Well, they bring Dom Capers in to run this 3-4,
right.
And they take Aaron Kampman, their best defensive player, barring the corners, because the corners are good, and they change fronts. Well, how does that make sense?
It makes none.
It
it's not working.
None.
It's not working.
And it didn't work for Dom Capers.
No.
Dom Capers' system worked because when he came here, head coach Tom Coughlin said, we run a 4-3. We want your input on some of the things
right.
that we do, but we run a 4-3.
Right. You're
and
right.
they did.
You're absolutely right.
355-NFL-1. 355-6351. Just this quick note, it may not be working all that well, but they're fourth in all in defense with up there.
Yeah, but they just got beat by a rookie quarterback, and he scored 31 points. And they've been lit up twice by the Vikings. Well, you know, most of all, they've been lit up by the Vikings' running game. And that's where the 3-4 struggles. There's not enough meat up front to stop the run.
That was the reason why, when you go way back when the early days of the 3-4, and I'm talking pre-Dick LeBeau, Dom Capers in Pittsburgh, when they designed the blitzing style of 3-4.
Zone blitz.
The movement to the 4-3 was a response because teams couldn't stop the run with a 3-4 defense.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of crazy, isn't it?
It is.
You see, the first truth, the first 3-4 team that I know of that was successful was the Denver Broncos Orange Crush. They had Mecklenburg, they had Gratishar, and Tom Jackson.
Who was 71, the defensive lineman? Cragen?
Greg Cragen,
yeah. Good
yeah.
player.
Yeah. Mecklenburg, Gratishar, and Tom Jackson were the stars. They had good corners. Geez, the one guy in particular, and I can't remember his name now.
They had Dennis Smith.
Yeah, Dennis Smith.
Steve Atwater.
No. Dennis Smith was with Seattle. No, that was Easley. Kenny Easley was in Seattle. Atwater was in Denver, and Dennis Smith. They were great
they
safeties.
Were together,
I forget
right.
where Dennis Smith was,
but when Atwater got there, they had made the move back to the 4-3.
I'll take your word for it. But anyhow, going back to the Orange Crush days of Red Miller when he was the coach.
He
installed it. They could stop the run with three down linemen because their linemen were lighter, quicker guys. These were guys who could run around blocks. They weren't defeating blocks. Jackson was a smallish, quick linebacker. They were running around the backside and running plays down.
Didn't those Bills teams with Fred Smirlis play 3-4?
Smirlis was a nose tackle for
yes.
sure.
Yeah, they mm-hmm.
so they
played,
did some of that.
They played 3-4, and Bruce Smith was a defensive end
right.
in that, but they never played the old school 3-4.
Two guys.
And then they actually mixed in quite a bit of 4-3 as well.
3-5-5 right. NFL. Well, let's grab one more call before we go to our next break, and it's Kelly out at the beach. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, guys. How are you tonight?
Good.
Good. I have a quick question for Vic. Having spent a lot of time in deer hunting season where it's a frenzy and everybody leaves town for 10 years, I wondered what his interpretation of Deer Widow Special was when he saw those signs along the...
Deer yeah, Widow
I,
Special?
Yeah, no, Whoa, no, yeah, the... I remember this. I remember this. Deer Widow Special. I remember seeing this now. I'm not going to venture
a
guess.
You've got to let everybody else in on this because we have no clue what you're talking about.
Loggy doesn't even know, and he knows everything about deer hunting.
Oh, in Michigan, all of the hamburger joints, all of the bars, Everything in these towns that would be completely vacated by men as soon as deer season opened,
mm-hmm.
they would be running deer widow specials. So all the women left behind, it was like ladies' night at all these bars because there was no one else in town to go to them.
And you know what Vic was doing when they had the deer widow specials?
He was the only guy.
He was at the bar.
Yeah. He was the smart guy.
He wasn't a deer hunter. He was at the bar.
Now, I used to have to take something, I've said this before, something called deer kills. They would come into the newspaper. You know, it was just a tradition. You had to take the name of the guy. All right, the name. And the guy would say, Randy. No, not the deer's name, your name, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. All right, you know, and he'd give you Joe Smith, and he'd give you the town, and how many points the deer was, you know, and where he got the deer, what county or...
I just want everybody to know that I have not misdirected this conversation away from football.
No,
and
it had
deer,
nothing to do with
okay?
No, had the
Lockie Kelly, it's your fault, and it's Lee's fault.
One day, guy says...
I take full responsibility, but, you know... I know how frenzied deer season can
someone
be for
someone had to do
people.
It.
We've got a new nickname for Vic now, Kelly. The Mr. Deer Widow Special.
One day, guy calls in to report his deer kill, and he wants a picture taking the deer. No, we don't take any pictures of dead deer. He says, oh, no, it's just, trust me. He says, you want to take a picture of this one? This one's really special. I said, the only way out, we're going to come on and take a picture of that deer is if it's an albino. And he said, it is. So we went out and took a picture of it.
Kelly,
thanks
for the
guys.
Call. You know, if they're going to call Terrence Knighton pot roast, maybe we could call him backstrap. Let's take
a look. This is the season.
No,
this is
right.
It, baby. They're dying out there.
We'll take a break. More to come with Jaguars this week. From Jaguars Central, inside the stadium, on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
As nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Yankees fan just walked in here, and Fortunato just lit him up. Still stinging from that.
I like Joe's shirt. He's taken off the Philly shirt, and now he's wearing a Jaguars issue shirt.
About time.
It's really nice looking.
He doesn't look good in red.
No, he doesn't. It's a kind of cream color.
I'm waiting for you to go to the Caddyshack line that you use all the time.
That's the worst shirt I've ever seen, but it looks good on you.
355-NFL-1. Phone lines are stacked. We've got 7 minutes before the top of the hour, so let's knock them down. And let's go with Greg, who joins us via his mobile phone. Thanks for spending a dime tonight, Greg. What's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Real quick for Jeff. I'm a co-worker of your brother's. We move the boxes around the world together. And... you know, I'm the first one to recognize that hindsight's 20/20. And the question I have for you guys is, you know, starting with our disaster of passing Roethlisberger to get Leftwich in the draft,
No, Roethlisberger for Williams.
I'm sorry, you're correct.
Right.
How do you guys see our talent evaluation improving, particularly in light of the changes in the head office? And I'll take my answer on the radio. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Greg. And people are wondering about moving boxes around. Greg and my brother are FedEx guys, so that's how they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
The direction, I mean, if you look at the production of Gene Smith's first draft class, and I'm talking about his first true draft class, could you ask for anything more?
Nope. No.
You know, and seriously, if Eugene Monroe were playing at a little higher level, which I expect him to, he's a Virginia guy. Okay, I got a lot of expectations out of him.
I would understand.
He needs to get better. Okay, he needs to finish better. Okay, now I'm going to be hard on him. He ain't there
don't
yet.
Talk to him.
But if Eugene Monroe turns out to be the type of player that they believe that he can be, because he's clearly talented, this is a blockbuster draft class. I mean, this is big time. You're talking two starting tackles, a starting defensive tackle, a starting corner, and potentially a starting tight end.
How about receivers?
And a starting wide receiver, if not a third wide receiver, and another possible extra wide receiver, and possibly a share of the load running back.
It's best draft I've covered since 1974.
It's pretty good.
And that was the one that produced how many Hall of Famers?
Four of the first five picks were Swan, Lambert, Stallworth, and Webster.
So that answers the question right there.
I mean, I really
that
I
one
mean,
was better.
I would say
that
well,
one was
there's
better.
No doubt
that may be the best draft class in NFL history.
Well, it is. Yeah. It is. I mean, four Hall of Famers and five picks is going to do it. But I'm telling you, and I mean this, I'm not comparing the
Swan
two.
Swan was in that class.
Swan was the first.
He shouldn't have been a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. But that's just me.
There's people who don't think he has the numbers. Now, if he doesn't have the numbers, Paul Warfield doesn't either.
But he played in a different era.
No, they played in the same era. They played in the same era. They played against each other. But look at the postseason stats. Look at those guys. In an era that they ran the ball, unbelievable. And the Super Bowl was not the game then that it is now. It struggled in the early years, and Swan is the guy who really distinguished it.
Are you wanting to make the case for Art Monk?
I think you can make the case for a lot of guys.
Monk has the numbers. But he doesn't have the postseason moment. See, well, Swan and Monk are the exact opposite. The exact opposites. One did it when the light was shining brightest, and the other one didn't.
I'm not trying to make a case that one guy should be in over the other. I'm trying to make a case is that if you look at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, look at the number of skill position players versus the number of big guys. There's a problem.
Absolutely.
There's a big-time problem.
Not just skill position versus big guys, offense versus defense.
No doubt.
It is so loaded with offensive players. The best thing that ever happened to Lynn Swan, the best thing, was Bob Hayes getting in. Nobody can complain now.
Let me tell you this. How in the world can Dick LeBeau not be in the Hall of Fame?
There's a movement to get him in.
Yeah,
he should be in as a player. He should be in as a player.
It shouldn't require movement for Dick LeBeau to be in there as a player.
What's he got, 71 interceptions?
Yep.
I mean, how in the world does a guy have 71 interceptions in an era which they didn't throw the ball like they do today? How is he not in the Hall of Fame?
And 50 years in terms of service in the NFL as a coach and a player.
How many interceptions do the Jaguars
you're
have
telling
in their
me
history?
That John Madden deserves to go to the Hall of Fame ahead of Dick LeBeau? No way. No way. They got to look at that. The league needs to look at that.
There's another guy. LeBeau, yes, there's another guy, and his name is Jack Butler. He was the first and only president of Blesto for all the years until a few years ago, and he was the best tackler in the history of the game, and he was a two-way player, and he was just as tough as they came. But you see, there's a classic case of defensive player. LeBeau, defensive player. Jack Butler, defensive player. Look at the players who have been snubbed. Derek Thomas, defensive player. Over and over and over, the guys who have been snubbed have been defensive players.
Is LeBeau snake bit because Paul Kraus was the same era?
They were considered to be the same guy,
yeah.
So they took the guy with three or four more interceptions.
Right. I mean, is that what's keeping him out?
Well, what's keeping
what's
keeping him out is he played in an era of what they call umbrella coverage. All right, so basically he was a safety, and they don't like safeties. You see, it wasn't until Lem Barney came along right after Dick LeBeau that you started getting into these press bump and run coverages, and then you had to have corners who really had athletic skill. Dick was playing in that umbrella coverage era.
All right, we've got another hour of this fine radio program to come, so stick with us. News is next, though, on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Here we go, hour number two now of Jaguars This Week. Vic Ketchman is here, Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato. Yours truly, Brian Sexton. We invite you to join us at 355-NFL1. If you happen to be listening over the internet or are outside of our calling area, 800-355-NFL1. And the phone call is free to you. Our broadcast this evening brought to you by Justex Watches. They're available exclusively at Espling Jewelers. To reset the topic of this evening, Jaguars and Jets on Sunday afternoon. Meaningful game, big game for the Jaguars. And if you even want to utter the P word, playoffs, next week you have to win this week. Correct, Vic?
This is it. You have to believe that. And here's why I believe it. The Jaguars currently have two teams ahead of them in the wild card race record-wise, either Pittsburgh or Cincinnati, assuming that one of them, well, of course, one of them will be leading the division and the other one will become a wild card contender, although it doesn't have to stay that way. It will be after this week's games. And the other one is San Diego. They would each have, well, they, right now one has two losses and the other one has three. Okay, then you got the Jets of the world, the 4-4s of the world, the Houston Texans who are 5-4. So they're a half a game ahead of the Jaguars, but they've lost to the Jaguars.
Right, so if the Jaguars win this week, they'd
be
half a game up.
You're going to be no worse than third in a two-team for two spots. You're going to be no worse, probably no worse than, well, Houston has a bye week. You would have the edge on them because you beat them head to head.
Right.
You would be no worse than third in a two-team in a race for two spots. You have to acknowledge that. As a reporter, I have to acknowledge that. That's not my expectation that this team is going to make the playoffs. But I can live with being wrong. I have no problem with saying, hey, I got that wrong. Give me the playoffs. But most of all, give me some excitement. And that's what this game is going to do this week. It's going to give me some of that November excitement.
If they win this week, it'll be the best win on their record.
Absolutely, and they
no,
will
no
be.
Doubt.
Would you agree with me? If they win this week, they're in it.
They're in what?
They're in the
in
playoff.
The
in the
oh,
hunt.
Oh yeah, they're
in the hunt.
Absolutely in the hunt.
And if they lose this week, they're out of it because then
now, we're not trying to say though the hunt, you know, to be in contention for a title. We're talking about in the hunt.
We're talking
for
about
a playoff.
They're a contender. As of the third week of November, they'll be a contender. I mean, how else are you going to call? You know, how
yeah.
else, you're going
to. Well, what we're talking about is more meaningful games.
Yes, exactly. If they lose, they'll not only have the other two teams ahead of them still, they'll have Houston ahead of them, and the Jets will be ahead of them with the tiebreaker. I mean, then at that point, it's going to become hopeless because, you know, you got – in December, you've got, you know, you've got those two hard knockers to play, the Colts and the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And by the way, since we're on the subject, I want to ask you guys some questions. The big game this weekend in the league is not the Jaguars and the Jets. It's the Patriots and the Colts.
No doubt.
So who's going to win? Who do you like?
It's in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I think Indy's going to win this week.
Boy, it's hard to go against Peyton Manning the way he's been playing.
No, I have no trouble.
And it's a regular season game. It's a regular season game, too.
I would be stunned if the Patriots don't beat him.
Really?
They always beat him.
Yeah, they're 2-5. Peyton Manning is against the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just Peyton Manning is playing so well. The defensive ends for the Indianapolis Colts are playing at a very high level. It's at Indianapolis.
Now, the flip side is they've had a lot of defensive injuries. They've lost
They got four guys out.
Marlon Jackson is gone for the year. Bob Sanders is gone for the year.
But you know what? Do you have to have great players in the secondary when you got no time to throw it?
And by the way, they're coming up. I'm going to dig up their schedule because they're coming up on a little nasty little run. They got Baltimore in here. They've got some juicy games coming up. I'm not suggesting that the Jaguars could catch them because they can't. They can't. That's not what I'm saying. But it's going to get a little more difficult for them. Who do you think is the best team in each conference right now?
Saints, I think are probably the best team in the NFC. AFC, I don't know. I mean, you can sit there and make a case for Cincinnati, you make a case for Baltimore, and you certainly can make a case for New England. I don't know.
Except Baltimore's lost, what, three of their last four games? They've really fallen off.
Yeah, they have. And they've lost
Colts.
In tough fashion.
No,
too.
I'm talking the Colts, Cincinnati. Did I say Baltimore?
You said Baltimore.
I meant Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Colts, Cincinnati, and New England.
The Broncos are 6-2. Do they factor
I'm
into
not
that?
Buying into them. Yeah. You know, and we had this discussion, gosh, I think second or third week when Denver was undefeated and we were talking about who is the most overrated or who wasn't a team that was a legitimate undefeated team at that point in the season. We had it, I think, on first rounds on us with me and Marco. And my opinion was Denver. I'm not a big believer in Kyle Orton.
Broncos.
No, but they do. I like their defense.
It's a heck of a lot better.
Yeah. Here's what the Colts have coming up. New England this week, then at Baltimore, and then at Houston. Now, they could go, you know, club there.
That's a marquee game, too, them against Houston.
Absolutely.
It was a good game last weekend.
That's a great game.
Okay, so, I mean, they got the Patriots at Baltimore, at Houston. That's a nasty little run. Then they get the Titans at home, the new Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, they're the same.
Then Denver at home. They'll beat Denver at home. Then they come to Jacksonville. Then they got the Jets left, too.
You really think that Vince Young has a chance of beating Peyton Manning?
Let me tell you the great thing about what Vince Young is doing. There's a chance that if he continues to do this, Bud Adams will pay them the money, and he'll remain that team's quarterback, and that is the very best thing that could happen to every other team in the AFC South, including the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So root for Vince Young?
Absolutely. You can't win with that guy.
355-NFL-1. 355-6351. Let's grab John in Keystone Heights. He held through the break at the top of the hour. Hello, John. How are you tonight?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Okay, first off, I want to make a special thanks to all the veterans.
Yeah,
and also to their families, because a lot of people don't include their families. Their families are included in that, too.
Very good. That's a great gesture on your part. Thanks for reminding us.
The other thing is just not part of what I was going to talk about, but if Cincinnati could beat Pittsburgh, then look at the rest of their schedule. They could be looking good, too.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. That's not what you want to happen. And I'll tell you. I'll tell you why. Cincinnati has already lost to Denver and to Houston. Their two losses are to AFC teams, okay?
You're right where you're going with this one.
So they become vulnerable. If Pittsburgh was to beat them this week and win the division, they've got a long way to go, of course, but I'm saying if they were to win the division, Cincinnati would have some serious AFC baggage that would hurt them in a tiebreaker. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
Whereas the Steelers have lost to the Bears. You know, one of their two losses is to an NFC team. That could change, I understand that, but Cincinnati's already got two foots in the tiebreaker grave.
355-NFL-1.
Did I say 2 foots?
Yeah.
And 2 feet.
We let you say it.
Good God.
I like that.
It
shows that you're not, you know, the perfect English master, you know, that you are.
You come from a place where they say yuns, why would two foots be off?
There's the way you talk and there's the way you write, and I hope to God I don't write as I talk.
Let me ask you this. Do you depend on spell check?
Not much. I do on some trap words. I have trap words. Here's one. Peak and peak.
Double peak, E or EA?
The top or...
Peak your interest.
Or peak to
there's
window.
Another one.
Yeah.
There's peak look, and there's peak the top of a mountain, and then there's peak your interest, P-I-Q-U-E.
Right.
I'm okay with that one, but the peak and peak, the P-E-E and P-E-A.
How about peep? Does that mesh you up?
Hmm?
Does peep mesh you up?
Not peep, but peak does.
Okay.
Not peep.
How about effect and effect?
I'm okay with that.
Right.
All you have to do is insert the word two. Right. If the word two fits, then that's the one you want to use.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, English via the senior editor. We'll take a break and return. More to come on Jaguars this week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now back to Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Jaguars fans, you can enter to win $50,000 towards the purchase of your new home with Prudential Network Realty's Take It to the House drawing. One winner is chosen for each home game. They and a guest receive tickets, parking pass, and a chance to win $50,000. Log on to PrudentialNetworkRealty.com for all the details. Linda Shearer's team over at Prudential is extremely full service.
Yeah. By the way, before we get another call, one of the things I'm getting to ask Vic this week is, people were angry at me because I told them before the season began that my expectations were very low. But now I'm writing and talking about a big game in New York. And come on, Vic, which one is it? And this thing, it has me.
You can have both.
Yes.
What's wrong with that?
Yes. I mean, if we got to the point that we're so fragile that having low expectations means giving up, resigning to yourself the fact that this cannot happen, therefore I give up, and now I can't be hurt. Hey, sometimes you got to fall in love.
Well, it's a fluid season, for goodness sakes.
Rejection is it's a fact of life.
Are you going to start singing again?
If you like, I'll.
Please don't.
When we started talking about falling in love,
now,
I thought.
He just hurt my feelings with that comment. What do you got there, Joe? No, I'm not singing.
The very thought of you.
you're terrible.
Get that mood indigo.
The worst thing about Joe is also the best thing about Joe.
You gotta be careful about what you do in that microphone.
He sits in here all day long with that stupid machine.
Yes.
Turning words backwards and inside out.
No, you sang that.
Yeah, I
was here when you did that.
That was your voice.
That was your singing.
That stuff was spliced together. I did not sing it as it was.
No, but
yes,
it was her.
Did. You didn't say ah as many times,
no.
But
you know. What you get for making fun of his Philly shirt?
Yeah.
That was you, Vic.
All right, here we go, folks. Back to the phone lines, 351.
I can't believe you put that shirt on and left the house. Honest to God, I can't.
He's trying to get
the one he's wearing now,
yeah,
or that one?
It's just horrible.
He's got a new haircut, though. He's looking good.
He looks like.
It does wash you out with your gray goatee and the gray streaks in your hair.
I mean, I got to ask you.
You need a little more.
Are
color.
You going for a Robert De Niro look? Seriously, I mean, because you got the kind of old age Robert De Niro thing.
What are you trying
on.
To say, Vic?
Well, you know the little thing around the hair around the mouth.
That's a goatee. Are you talking to me?
Hey, you talking to me?
Take a phone call.
You sure?
Yeah, really.
It's really just getting good. You never know what's going to happen, folks. Let's grab Sam on the west side. Hello, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good evening. Listen, I just got a couple of comments, and then I'll ask a question. Maybe Vic or Jeff, you guys can help out on this one. Being that Tennessee is in our division, I would have loved to have seen us beat them. And, you know, I hate to say lose to the Chiefs, but, hey, but 4-4 is great. Fantastic. I love that. If you guys take the last year's team and put us where we are today, I don't think 4-4. I think we will be probably even worse, record. So with that, I'm glad the Jaguars are 4-4. And last question, I think the Jaguars were the only team that, are you there?
Yeah, yes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The Jaguars are the only team who held the Colts to 2 points difference when we played them. I don't think any other team did that.
No,
I mean, at least I don't think.
But you got to remember that, you know, that was early in the season, and that guy, Peyton Manning, hadn't gotten warmed up yet.
Mm-hmm.
He's warmed up now. But in response to your comment about you'd much rather have beaten Tennessee.
Oh, no, it's not the one I was thinking
okay,
of.
Okay, well, you got one. But you'd much rather have beaten Tennessee in Nashville and then maybe have lost to the Chiefs here. Uh-uh. Okay, because Kansas City is a bad football team. You don't ever want to lose to a bad football team, especially at home.
Now, they're both AFC teams, so it really doesn't matter. It was something else that he said that I found intriguing, and I want to hear what you guys have to say about this. He was talking about if last year's team was this year's team, meaning you'd kept that group together, would you be 4-4 now? I think it's a great question.
I mean, yeah, you probably could have been 4-4. But the problem is you wouldn't have been doing this.
Now, hold on. You got an offense right now.
Of going to do this.
You got an offense right now that's number 9.
Yeah.
That was my thing. I don't know that you'd be number 9 with Matt Jones, Reggie Williams, and Jerry Porter.
No, maybe not.
Who would your corners be other than Rasheen? Who's your other corner?
Well, who did they have last
Brian
year?
Williams. Brian
Williams. Drayton Florence. Brian Williams. Okay. All right. So you would have kept Brian Williams. He's on injured reserve, by the way. I know you
can't. No, I know. But his question was about take last year's team into this year. Could you be where you are now? And I believe so.
Okay. I think it's an intriguing question. I think
but it wouldn't feel as good,
as
it does now because this roster has an NFL high 13 rookies on it.
Very
and
good,
they're contributing
Jeff.
Rookies.
That's exactly how many rookies are on the roster, 13.
The most in the NFL, as you mentioned, so the arrow is pointing up. When
absolutely.
You say going like this for our radio audience,
yeah,
he's talking about
that.
He's talking about going
that. Yeah.
Fortunato's going nuts over there. He's got a tape of you too somewhere. Don't make him
imagine
pull it out.
Joe laying on his back, okay,
looking
and
up.
Follow across his forehead and then take the ramp up his nose.
Oh wow! You might want to turn your microphone on sometime.
No, this is perfect.
I love Joe.
I was playing football a couple of years ago, broke it, and no one knows the difference. It's perfect.
Joe's a star on Jaguars Monday, by the way.
I know. I listen. On the way to the television station to do that show that you don't know the name of, I listen every Monday night.
I got people all the time say, who's that guy with you? He's good.
He's got his own bobblehead. People don't know who it is.
People are drinking early.
All right, so
that was a good question, though.
I think it was. That's the kind of thing that you can debate and examine and go back. Let's go back. Let's look at the offensive line. If Khalif Barnes is your left tackle, you see what I mean?
Antonio,
I know
they've done some changes
that's
here,
what I'm
man.
Talking about the feeling wouldn't make you feel good. You know, if you brought all these guys back. Now, I wouldn't feel bad if Pashos was still there because
he's a good player.
Yeah, he's a good player.
On injured reserve, going for the year.
Team guy, yeah, absolutely. Maybe doesn't do that here, though. I mean, you don't ever know.
You're right.
You don't ever know.
355 NFL 1.
Hey, let me ask you this, because you've been around the league for a long time. What do you think about what happened?
Ocho Cinco?
No. With Woody Hayes in Atlanta.
Mike Smith. I sent him an email.
I say that.
I sent him an email. Mike, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. Just let it go. Your fans will support you. Your players will support you.
Oh, fans are going to love it.
Your media will support you. You don't have to do a thing except pay the fine.
Exactly.
Have we seen the fine on that one yet?
I just think it's no big deal. I mean, if you watch the video, what you'll see is that Mike is very, very innocent in all of his reactions. The first thing, because the camera's on him the whole way, the first thing you see is he's elated that the play had gained yardage and was successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see in his face.
Then he saw the cross-eyed look.
Then he saw the late hit, and you see him then go to the official, hey, throw the flag, throw the flag. And then you see that he sees his quarterback as being jostled, and now he's angry. So he goes from joy to anger, with alarm in between. And they're all spontaneous emotions. There's nothing contrived. There's nothing duplicitous or devious about. It's no big deal. Football's an edge game. It's guys get angry. I see it as no big deal. Now what Ocho Cinco did? Oh no no.
No, I agree.
I'd get his butt.
You can't even suggest that. But you know what? The league is going to look at what had happened in Atlanta, and
he's going to get fined big.
Yeah, he's going to lose some money.
5 to 10.
5 to 10 what?
Grand.
Oh no, it's going to be more than that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to approach. It'll be 15 to 20.
Ooh.
Would be my guess. You know, Dave, because he's
I covered.
Take a deep breath, Mike, because you know what? When you looked at what had happened there, and I think this is what the commissioner will look at, and this is what I would look at if I'm the commissioner. There was a lot of anger directed at a player that was not the one who hit the quarterback. Okay? In other words, D'Angelo Hall.
Who's a turd?
Well, whatever he is, okay, head coach has got to be above that. That's what the commissioner's thinking. Okay?
What do you want?
What'd you just call him?
He's a turd.
A turd.
Is that a Johnny Fever moment? Like you can't say booger on the air?
Can you say turd on the air?
You just did.
I don't see why not.
It's a football term.
I mean, I'm sure on the other side of the break, we'll talk about another one.
Well, I mean, D'Angelo Hall had a very negative past with the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
He's had
he said some pretty inflammatory things about the general manager, Thomas Dimitroff,
yes,
the week leading up to that game.
And he's had his moments with the Redskins, too. I remember something this summer. Brian's better on this stuff. I just remember, bad or good, something good or bad happening. But something happened this summer with D'Angelo Hall. There was some kind of a controversy, or maybe last spring.
I don't recall what it is off the top of my head.
I don't remember.
All right. I'm watching it over and over and over on YouTube, and boy, is he fired up.
Yeah, because that, see, and my whole thing is that I think what the commissioner is going to see is that that anger towards a guy that didn't hit his quarterback.
Well, I'll tell you what. If he gets fined, as you say, 15 to 20 you're talking, then they better lay the lumber to Ocho Cinco, because that is the one you never do. You never suggest that the officials are corrupt. And at a time when the NBA is going through a terrible situation involving its officials, at a time when we've even had some suggestive things happen in college football, that cannot
no,
be tolerated.
I agree, but and as far as Mike Smith is concerned, if I were on that team, I would love it.
I said that's exactly what I wrote.
And if I were a fan of the Falcons,
it's going to galvanize.
I would love it.
It's going to galvanize.
That is
the team.
a memorable moment that will make Mike Smith closer to the fans and closer to that organization.
I wrote to him that I covered a coach who.
You always talk about moments.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's a moment.
And this moment calls for me to interrupt to go to news. More to come. News is next. News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Hey, parents, want your kids to meet Jaguars linebacker Daryl Smith? Take it from me, you do. He is a great guy. You can by visiting Daly's at the corner of Atlantic and San Pablo Tuesday from 5:30 till 6:30. Daryl's there signing autographs, taking pictures. Wouldn't you agree? Daryl's one of the better guys that we've seen through here.
He is a wonderful, wonderful man. He's soft-spoken. He's accommodating. He's not a media star because he's never going to give me anything juicy.
Right.
But he's always going to talk to you. He's always going to answer your questions. He's just a really, really good person.
When the Jaguars got beat 41-0 in Seattle, Loggy went to the locker room. Nobody wanted to talk. Daryl was the only one that would step out of the locker room and share his thoughts.
You know, this team's got good media guys. I love Clint Ingram. He'll talk to you anytime, and he'll give you some juicy stuff.
Sure.
You know, he's better for me to talk to than Daryl Smith. Both good guys.
Because he's got one of those personalities.
Justin Durant, too. Good talker. Terrence Knighton is a delight. A delight. He's almost Bill Cosby-esque, and I use Bill Cosby because of the Temple connection.
Philadelphia.
He has that kind of Cosby calm to him. Derek Cox is an outstanding talker.
I'm not sure if there's a more clean-cut cornerback in the National Football League than him.
John Henderson is making gains as only one other player I ever covered, Mel Blount. Mel Blount went from being a guy you never interviewed, would never consider interviewing,
right,
to a guy who was a go-to guy for the media. That's John Henderson.
Sure.
Now. He's making tremendous gains.
And back in the summer, we didn't know whether he'd even be here or not.
Eben Britton is fantastic. Eugene Monroe is very good, and he's going to get better. He's got a little bit of college stardom, you know, that's got to get stripped off him.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. David Garrard has become very, very good. Maurice Jones-Drew is out of this world.
Rashad Jennings is excellent.
Mike Sims-Walker, I love him. Torrey Holt, I'm really glad that they brought him here, and I have had a chance to cover him. I love their locker room. I love what's going on with this team. You know, there's one other thing. I mean, other than them winning games, there's one other thing I wish would happen, and that's that the seats would start to get full because it's getting scary.
Do you think that if the Jaguars go to Buffalo, or pardon me, New York and win, come home and beat Buffalo, if they get on a roll here leading up through December, any indication that ticket sales will pick up?
The question I was asked and asked, Vic, I forget if I answered it today or it's going to be answered tomorrow, but I think it was today. The question was, if the Jaguars win their next three games, which would then lead them up to three consecutive games at home.
Right.
Houston, Miami, Indianapolis. Do I think those games would be sold out? And my answer is no. I don't think they'd be sold out. But I would expect that if the Jaguars win the next three games, that they would get a spike in attendance for that three-game home stretch.
Right.
If they won their next three games and didn't get a spike in attendance for those three games, then we know that winning isn't the solution.
Right. Well, I know that my neighbor out at the beach, Elaine Brown, and a lot of the chambers of commerce are working Chamber of Commerce now. This is not whatever they announced last week, but the Chamber of Commerce thing to sell out that Colts game, you are starting to see people look towards that game.
But see, that's Save the Whale isn't going to work for me.
Well, I know, but because, that's the one game that you want to avoid the embarrassment of national TV.
Yeah, I know, but just buying the ticket isn't good enough. You got to have butts in the seats that night because that's going to be a visual event.
Right.
They're going to turn the camera on the stands. So you either got to put your butt in the seat or you have to put a blow-up doll in there. Because buying the ticket, tickets distributed, isn't going to get it done. It's not going to accomplish what you want.
Doesn't show passion.
No. So, and I'm not really concerned about that one night. I'm concerned about next year, the year after that. We're going to run out of years if we don't start filling this building.
Well, we were talking about it on Sunday afternoon where there were so many empty seats against the Chiefs, and Jeff made a statement, which he doesn't do very often. He said, hey, folks, look, if you don't start coming to the games, this team is not going to be here. That's Jeff.
Jeff said that?
On the air, which he has not said all that often.
That's not a Jeff kind of thing.
No, it's not. So the alarm bell there was going off in his head. Hey, folks, where is it? My concern is that people will go through this entire season not having the games on TV, not going to the games, and if they're winning, will they come back? Will it become an issue where they've decided they can live without it?
If I was to end my career watching the Mayflowers, you know, metaphorically speaking.
No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Watching the Mayflowers, waving as the Mayflowers pulled out, I'd be devastated.
Yeah.
I really would be devastated.
Joe would be. I would be. Jeff would be. I mean, we're talking about the thing here, which has given us all in Jacksonville an opportunity.
But the folks don't have an obligation to buy the tickets.
No.
And you can't expect that. They have to buy the tickets because they want to buy the tickets, because they want to see the game. And what's got to happen here is that something has to happen to capture their hearts. Something has to happen to captivate them. They need a immaculate reception. They need a miracle in the Music City Miracle.
Right.
They need a moment as they had in Denver in 1996 and the rally that in the middle of the night, you know, the flyby and all that stuff.
Morton missing.
We need some kind. Yeah, Morton's yeah. Miss. We need some kind of an emotional moment, some kind of a run that roots itself in people's hearts. If something was to happen that this team got hot, you know, almost eerily hot. You know,
like 96 all over
yeah,
again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because this would be that point.
Yeah, exactly.
This would be that point.
You know, that team was 4-7.
I remember.
Was 4-7 when it came back from Pittsburgh.
Butt kicking in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. It was 4-7 when it came back from Pittsburgh. And Monday,
They cut Andre Rison.
And that locker room looked as though the guys were going to an execution. There was no chance of. I didn't think they would win another game.
Well, looking at the schedule.
And they didn't lose another game.
Right.
And by the way, I want to one more thing on this. They were 4-7. They went to Baltimore. Vinny laid it on the ground. The Jaguars beat them in overtime. Remember?
I do.
Okay.
Mark Brunell to Willie Jackson.
Now they're 5-7. They come home and they play Cincinnati, a bad Cincinnati team.
In the driving rain.
In the rain. And there were 50,000 people here. This is year two.
Yeah.
Seats were empty.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a horrible attendance. And
Hollis kicked 5 field goals that day.
And they win the game. Now they're 6-7, and they're driving toward the playoffs.
Go to Houston,
and of course, the Cinderella season. So it's not as though you can go. It's not as though you can't go from empty seats to a middle of the night rally,
right?
Because that team did. They had empty seats against Cincinnati late in the year, and they came back from Denver to a 2 o'clock in the morning pep rally.
Unwittingly,
it can be done.
You have just laid a lot more on the line for Sunday's game, because every rally starts with some point, and that's the point.
You know, I got to find ways to amuse myself too.
Oh, no, I understand completely.
I want this to matter. I want to cover something where I feel like I'm glued. My eyes are glued to the field, as opposed to that feeling last year, where, you know, I'm looking around the press box to see if there's anybody I know I haven't seen in a while so I can go talk
to
them.
You're a better writer when you're covering something that's magnified, something
Absolutely.
That grips your attention. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We've got callers on the line. Let's go to a break. We'll come back and have one final segment of Jaguars This Week. Jeff is gone, so it's the Vic Show. Just for one more segment. It's Jaguars Monday on Wednesday after this.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back, Jaguars This Week. One final segment, about 10 minutes, and the phone lines are stacked, so we'll go right to it. All right, let's grab Jennifer, who joins us from Jacksonville Beach. Hello, Jennifer.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a little comment about Torrey Holt. I always bring my binoculars to the games, and I was watching the sideline activity when the offense came off the field. And you know how they all sit on the bench and the fans, to get cooled off. Well, Torrey was like standing up the whole time when they came off the field, watching the defense really into the game. My heart just wanted to hug him. It was just so, I don't know, just watching how he was into the game, watching the whole thing, never sat down. And I really liked that. I think it shows a lot about his character. And I just want to say that True to the Teal, the grassroots movement, I think we should all get on the bandwagon because that's what's going to keep this team in Jacksonville. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, Torrey's a demonstrative guy.
Yeah.
I'm not into sideline demeanor because I think we make too many judgments based on it. You know, last year in Houston, it was decided that Coach Del Rio wasn't using the right facial expression, and so everyone got down on him. All right, come on, what is that? He's not playing the game with his face.
No, but there are certain guys when it's real and you know it's real, it's interesting to observe.
Yeah. Well, David Garrard gets ripped because he smiles too much after an interception or after a bad play. Some people wear a smile. That's just their expression.
Right.
Hines Ward is the classic example. He's always smiling. I had a guy who actually sent me an interesting email today. He said, in Asian culture, smiling is a form of expressing embarrassment. I mean, there's different cultures have different definitions for facial expressions. Look. You judge a guy by how he plays on the field. Is his effort committed? Is he balls to the wall? You know, is he going all out? If he is, don't worry about what he's doing on the sideline.
355-NFL-1. Jennifer, we appreciate your phone call. Let's grab Ray, who joins us from the north side of Jacksonville. Ray, welcome to the show.
Hey, fellas. How y'all doing?
Good, good.
I have one quick question for you. Down this stretch, if we can get a pass rusher to emerge, well, that'll definitely increase our chances on defense of making some plays, correct?
No question.
I mean, you know, and it just looked like to me like Darryl Smith, I mean, you know, he really was getting pressure on the quarterback when he had a chance to put his hands on the ground. And I'll take my comments off the air. I just wanted to know if there's any possible way if somebody was to emerge to get pressure on the quarterback, I think that'll really turn this defense around and we'll go from a 31st ranked pass defense to being able to contend in games. I'm going to take my comments off the air.
The classic example of what you're saying is Tony Brackens in 1996. The game against Seattle here late in the year, which was his coming out party. He changed the face of the Jaguars, not only the Jaguars defense, but the Jaguars team, by emerging late in the season as one of the great pass rush forces in the league.
2.5 sacks.
As a rookie.
Had an interception.
Exactly.
It was a big game for him.
So, I mean, if something was to happen here that Brian Smith, a third-round pick who failed in one place, Philadelphia, where they had a lot of defensive line talent. He got lost for a good reason. It was because it was easy to get lost among the Coles and Pattersons. But if something was to happen, that somebody jumped out as a pass rusher that you could count on, it changes everything.
I don't think it's any more ludicrous than if a couple of weeks ago I suggested that Brian Smith was going to be a starting defensive end. But what about seeing more of Julius Williams? We had Mel Tucker.
Well, we did see more against the Chiefs, did we not?
Right. And Mel Tucker was in on Jack's show last night, and he kept talking about what a terrific worker this kid is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes from the weight room to watch more film, compact, powerful, just doesn't. He's raw.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got speed and power. Why not see more of him?
See, the guy I'm waiting for is Justin Durant because he's got the speed. He's got the run-and-hit personality and instincts. He's got the sick 'em kind of tendencies that you want in a linebacker, and especially a weak side linebacker. He's a guy you can blitz to the quarterback and not expose yourself,
right?
Because he's on the weak side.
Some guys just don't. They don't rush the passer well. I mean, that
I thought he was going to be one who did, but
right.
But they're not getting much out of him, and
he's not played all that well. Of course, he's been injured. He's had that groin and that hip that have bothered him.
I hold out hope for him.
355-NFL-1. Try and grab a couple more. Let's grab Leopold, who joins us from the beach. Hello, Leopold. Good evening.
Hey, Vic.
Hey, Leopold.
Hey, I got the answer that you're looking for about the ticket sale issue.
Okay.
And my answer is you said the team go on a run and they get to that home stretch where they're playing three straight home games and they on the run.
Yeah.
We would sell out. We would not sell out, but we would do 55 to 60,000. And I will tell you why. Remember the Arizona Cardinals game, our home NFL season game, they did 38,000. When we went to Houston and we won at Houston and we came back to Tennessee, we went from 38,000 to 46,000. Yes. If we would have went on the road and not laid an egg in Seattle, and say we would have won that Seattle game, that would have went from 46,000 to at least 50,000.
Leopold, I hope you're right, and I hope the Jaguars win the next three games, because I'm telling you, this thing is starting to get scary. I don't know what it is. I don't know if the people, you know, TV ratings are down. They're just road games. That the ratings are just for road games. They're down 10%.
Yeah,
The numbers are about this team are getting scary. They're getting scary as far as the attendance numbers. They're getting scary as far as the TV ratings numbers. They're getting scary in a lot of ways. And I don't know if this is a case of I'm talking to people who really don't care, and if that's the case, then I should just shut up. Or if I'm talking to people who really care and just need a nudge. If you need a nudge, consider yourself nudged, because this is getting scary.
355
NFL. For lack of a better word.
No, it's the best word. Let's grab one more call, and it'll be John, who joins us from Lake City. Hello, John.
Hey, guys, a couple things. First, I was a season ticket holder 14 years. I almost dropped out when they changed my payment plan and made me play this ridiculous every 3 months.
Don't do that. We can't go there. No ticket complaints. We won't go there. If you got something to say,
okay.
Not that.
Well, put seats in the fans in the seats. You got to have some gimmicks. Look at Jerry Jones, the gimmicks he's pulled off in Dallas. It's not just about the football. Traditional fans think, you just got to win. It's more than that in Jacksonville. It's going to take more than just winning to keep consistency going.
All right, that's fine. We had a, you know, this place is the king of the flyovers. I mean, we're the only thing more they could do here is have the freaking space shuttle land on the field. I mean. There's no place on earth that has flyovers, or bomb the place. I mean, there's really nothing else that the Air Force or the Navy can do except either land a space shuttle or drop a bomb.
Amazing job on Sunday.
Yes, the Military Appreciation Day was just.
It's not a gimmick, obviously.
It was almost queen for a day.
It was as much effort into that as there was the football team.
Yes, I mean they had. What was that? It was, what are the shows? This Is Your Life, Queen for a Day. I mean, they had the guy, they brought
the
family, the kid, the whole thing, you know.
He was in the reserves. Jack told us the other night that he was the suite attendant for the Del Rio suite here on game day years ago.
I don't know what more they can do, and I mean that.
And we'll leave it on that. Okay. Thanks, Vic. We appreciate your time. Folks, thanks for joining us here on Jaguars This Week. We'll talk to you on Sunday from the Meadowlands. Have a good week.
This has been Jaguars This Week.
presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.